So when we practice mindfulness, which is the moment-to-moment observation of your mind-body process through a calm and focused awareness, we're not trying to make anything happen. Whatever arises, we welcome. We don't push away, we don't get lost, and we observe. We don't detach from it, we don't attach to it, we are non-attached. We're present in a non-attached way. Are you familiar with the poem by Rumi, The Guest House? If you are, raise your hand. If you're not, I will share it with you if I can remember it. But the spirit of it is how we welcome whatever arises in our practice as a teacher, as a guide from beyond. Very important. We're not trying to get anywhere. We're not trying to heal ourselves. We're not trying to treat our trauma. We're trying to be with things as they are and greet them with mindfulness and compassion. The guest house is this being human. Is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. Dark thought, shame, some momentary visitor comes, or some momentary experience comes as an unexpected visitor. Entertain them all. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of, if anybody wants to help me, a crowd of horrors that come and empty your furniture, still greet each guest honorably. Each has been sent as a guide from beyond. What are we talking about? We're talking about your relationship to your experience. When you change how you look at things, what you look at changes. When you change how you be with things, what you be with changes. And you don't look at them and be with them in order to change them. That's the paradox. You look at them and be with them mindfully as they are. That's the transformation. That's the challenge. We've been conditioned only one way to push away or get caught in. And we get stuck in that vicious cycle. And a lot gets added to it. In order to create a bridge to another cycle, of acceptance, of love, of healing, the bridge is mindfulness. The bridge is seeing it clearly. The bridge is compassion. The bridge is understanding. But we're not trying to get somewhere. It was really interesting in my training. One of the things, persons I trained with, unfortunately, he recently passed away, was John Wellwood, a transpersonal psychologist, wrote many books. And he taught for many years at Omega, for like 25 years, something he called the healing power of unconditional presence, which is what mindfulness is. Unconditional presence. We don't hold our children in order for them to be the way we want them to be. We hold them because we love them the way they are. And then hopefully that's what they need, to see that it's safe and they're connected. And someone sees them and gives them space to be who they are. And then they're allowed to grow and be safe and feel connection and healing. It's the same in our relationship with ourselves. I had a patient recently, and I'll share this, then we're going to go over a handout, and I'll tell you a little bit about myself and my background as part of you understanding where I'm coming from. As a mind-body doctor, I see patients who come to me with a whole host of complaints. Unfortunately, I'm the last person that they come to because they've tried everything, and not that what they've tried is not good or right or therapeutic or helpful. It didn't get to the core of what was really happening for them. And so they didn't look at it in a different way. So imagine, I use this example when I teach because I think it's illustrative of mind-body medicine and trauma and healing and attitude and relationship. In our culture, what is the recidivism rate for weight loss and obesity in our society? Recidivism is you've lost 100 pounds, but you've gained it back. Anybody want to guess what the science research shows us? About over 90%. Now, if anybody's been in business, Any kind of business, if you fail 90% of the time, how do you stay in business? So how does Nutrisystem, Diet Center, Jenny Craig, and all of the diet programs that you will see advertised on magazines and stuff stay in business when people are failing? They lose 100, but then they gain it back, and then they try something else. And it's not like it didn't work. It didn't last because they didn't get to the core of the healing. So this is really important in terms of our attitude and relationship to our trauma, to our pain, or to our struggle to get free. The person comes, and now they've gained 100 pounds again. And they've done it 10 times. Well, now their diabetes is worse, and their back pain is there, and their microbiome is off, and their thyroid isn't functioning optimally, and they have digestive problems. And as a naturopath, we can find 100 supplements, herbs, tests to give them to create balance and all of that stuff, and it'll be good. And the patient will want that because they're suffering, you know, they're coming saying, you know, I'm scared and helpless and I need love, but they're saying, get rid of my fat. And I say to Mrs. Jones, why do you want to lose weight? She says, because I'm fat and ugly and I hate myself. So not only are we suffering, not only are we in pain, but we beat the crap out of ourselves and shame ourselves for it, which only adds to this vicious cycle. Now, if I jump in and go, okay, I'm going to give you a better diet. I'm a naturopath. I can work on your metabolism. I can test your digestion and do your thyroid and work with your neuroplasticity, and we're going to fix you. And she's going to be happy, and she's going to lose 100 pounds. And then 6 months later, she's going to be in another doctor's office. Unless I say to Mrs. Jones, is there something underneath that? Are you willing to listen to that, or are you so intent on getting rid of the fat as the answer? And I'm saying that with compassion, because they're suffering either way. This is from Jack Kornfield, my teacher, one of my teachers, his teacher, Ajahn Chah. There's two kinds of suffering. One is suffering that leads to more suffering, doing the same thing to get rid of it. This is what the Buddha taught. In the suffering is the end of suffering, the Four Noble Truths. There's suffering. There's a cause of suffering. There's an end to suffering, and there's a path to end the suffering. That's the teaching. That's the Dharma. Let's bring that to medicine. Let's bring that to healing. Let's bring that to trauma. So I say to Mrs. Jones, I'm happy to give you a diet, but I can't do that. I can't give you a program to lose weight when you're coming from a place of fat and ugly and you hate yourself. That's just reinforcing that intention. When you can tell me that you want to lose weight because you love yourself, I'm happy to tell you what would be helpful from a nutritional diet standpoint. But you don't need me to tell you that because you've lost weight 100 pounds five times. Your body has already proven that you can do it. But the consciousness didn't shift. The deeper healing didn't shift. Now we're going to get to the trauma. This is early in my career. And I was learning guided imagery to listen to the symptom, not just how to fix it, not just what's wrong, not just what to take, not just what the diagnosis is. Disease tells a story, not just of your cells and your diagnosis, but of yourself and your life. And you need to listen to both stories. Not to re-traumatize, not to over-identify with it, not to get stuck in it, but just to know the truth of what happened, to at least have an understanding, to recognize this is what's going on here. Okay? The statistics are overwhelming that for obesity, children have had what's called adverse childhood experiences, ACEs, or some form of trauma, or came from some dysfunctional family, or were abused, abandoned, neglected. And we're studying now what happens to children when those things go through. They end up later in life with addictions, with illness. It's the number one predictor of chronic disease. Now, I can tell Mrs. Jones that, but I have to help Mrs. Jones find that truth for herself. So I said, are you willing to listen? Are you willing to look with a beginner's mind and, you know, here's this thing that you've been trying to get rid of, and I'm saying the same thing. We want to get rid of our suffering. We want to get rid of our trauma. We're tired of it. We keep banging up against the wall, which is understandable. And then we end up going around in circles again and again. Stop. Two kinds of suffering. One
causes more, the other hurts, but
leads to healing and awakening, which is facing the truth of what it's really about underneath and connecting with it and getting the support to do so. So I did an imagery experience with her. Are you willing to listen to this fact? You hate it. You've been getting rid of it. It keeps coming back. Aren't you at least curious why it's there? Why does it keep coming back?
What's it about? She had only gone on diets. And I'm using this as an example, but I could talk about a whole host of diseases. And not that you don't need the practical clinical diagnosis and treatment. You do need that.
As a doctor, people need proper diagnosis, proper treatment, proper medicine. But disease also tells a story of yourself and your life. This is the mind-body connection that we're talking about. This is what I'm integrating in mindfulness and the teachings of the Buddha and in therapy, the whole person. And she got the image of a down comforter. And in that moment, she had a shift in consciousness. Oh my God, my fat is my friend. It's protecting me. It's keeping me safe. Carl Jung, all neuroses is a substitute for legitimate suffering. How do we survive our traumas from childhood or in life that we can't face, that we don't have the resource of safety, of connection, of our own heart of compassion to be with? The body bears the burden. The mind bears the burden. We escape from it. We do whatever we do to survive, not because we're bad or wrong or stupid or weak, because that's all we know. Especially as children, what do you do when mom and dad are screaming at each other and someone's an alcoholic and someone has mental illness and there's domestic violence? Or what do you do? And nobody's whispering in your ear, listen, so that you don't have trauma later in life, I want to help you with this. So we have choices and resources now. That's why I'm here. I'm here to help you see that you can cultivate choices and resources now that you didn't have before. So you stop beating yourself up, blaming yourself, judging yourself, stop trying to get rid of it and start loving it and embracing it, because it's a part of us that's scared and helpless and needs love. When I started as a doctor over 35 years ago, I was so good at helping people find the wound. And then they wouldn't come back. And I said, wait a minute, I don't get it. They've been suffering, and I know it's because of this and that, and I was able to help them make that connection. Why didn't they come back? And it took me a while to realize, because it hurts, because it's scary. That's why we avoid it to begin with. Trauma and PTSD is experience avoidance. That's what it is. It's, I can't face this stuff. I don't have the resources. I don't have the ability. I don't have the inner awareness. And so once we understand that, that's what mindfulness and compassion are giving us, the resources, the choice to face it. You know, Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, Full Catastrophe Living. The phrase, Jon Kabat-Zinn, popularized mindfulness-based stress reduction, you know, using the wisdom of the mind and body to face stress, pain, and illness. And we cannot just face it, we can transform it. It's an opportunity to awaken. It's actually the seed for awakening. Do any people, you are familiar with Sounds True? How many people have heard of Sounds True? It's an online program, and they have healers there, and Tara Brach talks there, and Jack Kornfield speaks there, and Dan Siegel speaks there. Sounds True. Sounds True. And they recently, you know, there's these summits that are going on like crazy. I've been in a couple. I'm going to be in one next week, I'll tell you. But in any event, they had one with all of their main speakers and teachers and writers, and it was really interesting. And I listened. And it was fascinating. They had Marianne Williamson, who's running for president. They had Tara Brach of our world, of mindfulness. Gabby Bernstein, a popular New Age speaker, teacher. A number of other people. Ajashanti, a spiritual leader. And they were being interviewed by Tammy Simon. And this is an introduction to me telling you my story a little bit, not just to give you a sense of we're all in it together from a wounded healer. These are the top teachers, speakers. You know what they all did? They all told the story of their childhood trauma, of being abused, of being sexually abused, of being abandoned, of all of the wounds and hurt. And why are they teachers? Why am I sitting here? Because I was on my own path to heal my own wounds and my own pain. And now I'm just sharing with others what I've learned that may be helpful for you as I continue on my path. We're all wounded healers. It was really interesting to hear that, because that's every single one of them. Marion Williamson, they all have a story of trauma. You are not alone. I am not alone. We are not alone. I mentor doctors now. They want me to teach them mind-body. What should I do? How do I do this? And I don't do that in the same way that I don't tell Mrs. Jones how to lose weight until she's willing to look inside with love and compassion. And I help the doctors, the therapists, tell me your story. What's your trauma? What's your wound? And I don't have to teach them how to help their clients once they have an own sense of where it is in themselves. You understand?
So this is healing our relationship with ourselves.
If you go to the first handout, it's the seven intentions. This is foundational. This comes from Jon Kabat-Zinn's book. But this is what we're cultivating. This is the medicine. This is how to be with. If you don't have a handout, they'll give you one. Raise your hand and the assistants will give one to you. It's simple. It's basic mindfulness. If I'm saying to you that the medicine and the therapy and the healing is in how we choose to relate to our experience in the two kinds of suffering, not to get rid of it, but to welcome it, to embrace it, to be with it, to stop trying to go get out of here and say, come on, because I know you're hurting and I know you're scared and I know you need love, and I'm going to give it to you. That's healing your relationship with yourself. And the first foundation in mindfulness, why it's therapeutic, is because it brings us into the moment and it teaches us how to have a beginner's mind. Non-judgment, patience, trust, non-striving to get anywhere. Acceptance, radical acceptance. You know, Tara wrote her book, Radical Acceptance. And let it go by letting be. That's the foundation. It's not, oh, who cares? It's, no, that's the foundation. From that awareness, from that acceptance, from that non-striving, then we choose wisdom and compassion. How shall I be? Shall I go on another diet, Mrs. Jones, who's done it 10 times? Or should I look inside and be with the little girl underneath the fat that the fat has been protecting for the last 20 years? Let me choose my suffering. One will be another diet and more of the same. The other will be a scared little girl that feels helpless and needs love. And I have the choices and resources within me, and the support of maybe family, friends, group, doctor, therapist, to help be with that. That's a choice that we have to make. And the wisdom comes from that. Who are the people who, you know, be the change you want to see? Who inspires you? The most compassionate people in the world were the ones with the most action. Why do all of those people, you know, Tara and Jack and Mary, why are they out there trying to make the world a better place? Because of their own pain, their own suffering. Because of the compassion that their wisdom and their action is not coming from, you know, yelling and screaming, but really understanding the wound underneath, the Martin Luther Kings, the Gandhis, the Mandelas, people who act from a place of compassion. That's what I want to support you to be with here, not to get rid of it, but to welcome it, to trust it, to learn to love it, and to know that you have the resource and the choice to do so, even if no one has helped you yet. Recognize that. That's another part of our teaching, your Buddha nature. It's who you are. Pema Chodron speaks about that all the time in talking about compassion. So this is not getting rid of, this is not fixing, and then I'm okay. I heard a commercial the other day. This is just a mind-body context by Sloan Kettering. And it was, come to Sloan Kettering, we'll get you back to your old self.
And I had to pull over to the side of the road because I was screaming. I said, no, it's not about going back to your old self. It's about using the illness as an opportunity to be who you really are and to free yourself from the old self. Because the old self that was, you know, etc. So this is a shift of seeing it with new eyes. And then it's not so heavy. We don't have to beat ourselves up and try so hard because all of that shame. Just imagine what I said to you, why I used the example. I said to Mrs. Jones, okay, here's the diet. Let me go to this test. We're going to balance your microbiome. We're going to work on this. And I'm saying to her, you're right. You're fat and ugly and you should hate yourself until you lose weight. We're doing that to ourselves. Start with compassion. Start with acceptance. Start with welcoming. That's what mindfulness does. I've been practicing almost 40 years, and I've learned every therapy, every technique, every tool. You know the most powerful medicine and therapy there is for what we're talking about? Mindfulness practice and compassion. It blew me away. I didn't start this in order to use it in therapy. I was doing it for myself and my own suffering and had to deal with my own struggles. And the more I practiced, I'm learning this, and I said, wait a minute. And the more we started to really understand about trauma, about mind-body, and about the power of mindfulness, it's like it's in every therapy that we use now for healing. It's integrated. I did a whole training in DBT, Dialectical Behavioral Therapy, which is for trauma. The whole thing was mindfulness-based. They don't use the Buddha's teachings in that context, but that's the nature of the beast. Mindfulness-based stress reduction. Mindfulness, when John first started, they didn't want to mention Buddhism because it would be a little too, public wouldn't accept. But it's the Buddha. It's learn to respond instead of react. It's open to the truth of suffering as the path to end suffering. In the heart of the pain is the healing, and the heart of the suffering is the end of suffering. It's the getting rid of that causes the suffering. Not the issue itself. The issue itself breaks our heart and opens us to compassion and lets us move forward in that way.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.